بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يسرنا في شبكة بينونة للعلوم الشرعية أن نقدم لكم هذه المادة.
الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. نحمد الله عز وجل على تيسير إقامة هذه الدورة العلمية، ونسأل الله أن ينفعنا وإياكم بها. وأذكر نفسي وإخواني بأن سلوك سبيل طلب العلم نعمة من الله تبارك وتعالى، والنعم تدوم بشكرها.
So the Sheikh began praising Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, the Lord of all that exists. May the prayers and peace be upon Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, his family and his companions all together. As to proceed, the Sheikh, he says that we praise Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala for that which he has facilitated from this dawra al-ilmiya, and we ask Allah Ta'ala to make it to be a benefit for all of us. I remind myself and my brothers that the affair of seeking knowledge, it is a great ni'mah, a great bounty from Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, and all of Allah's favors required from us that we are grateful for them.
يقول الله تبارك وتعالى إنما يخشى الله من عباده العلماء. قال العلامة السعدي رحمه الله: فكل من كان بالله أعلم كان أكثر له خشية.
So Allah Ta'ala mentions inside of his book that indeed it is only amongst the servants of Allah that fear him, the ulama, those who have knowledge. As Sa'di alayhi rahmatullahi mentioned, that the more knowledge that a person has, the more he will fear Allah.
وَأَوْجَبَتْ لَهُ خَشْيَةُ اللَّهِ الْإِنْكِفَافَ عَنِ الْمَعَاصِي وَالْإِسْتِعْدَادَ لِلِقَاءِ مَنْ يَخْشَاهُ.
And that fear and knowledge that he has, it makes it incumbent upon him that he stay far removed from sins and disobedience, and that he be diligent upon the obedience and good deeds.
وهذا دليل على فضيلة العلم، فإنه داع إلى خشية الله.
This is the indication of the virtue of knowledge, and that it is something which calls to the fear of Allah.
وأهل خشيته هم أهل كرامته، كما قال تعالى: رضي الله عنهم ورضوا عنه ذلك لمن خشي ربه.
And those who have knowledge of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, those who fear Allah Ta'ala, they are those who are the most knowledgeable of him, or the most noble with Allah Ta'ala. As Allah Ta'ala mentioned inside of his book, that indeed that Allah is pleased with them and they are pleased with him. And this is something which are for those who fear their Lord.
وقد قال نبينا عليه الصلاة والسلام: من سلك طريقا يلتمس فيه علما سهل الله له به طريقا إلى الجنة.
Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that whoever traverses a path upon which he is seeking knowledge, Allah will make smooth for him a path to paradise.
فطلب العلم والاجتهاد فيه من أسباب دخول الجنة.
So seeking knowledge and being diligent upon that is from the means for entrance into paradise.
والمستزيد من العلم مستزيد من ميراث النبوة.
The one who increases in seeking knowledge is the one who increases in taking the legacy of prophethood.
وإن من العلوم المهمة التي تعين طالب العلم على الفهم الصحيح لنصوص الكتاب والسنة علم أصول الفقه.
And from the affairs and branches of knowledge that will aid the servant in having a sound understanding is the knowledge of the usul al-fiqh.
وبين أيدينا هذه الرسالة المختصرة في هذا الفن للشيخ عبد الرحمن بن ناصر السعدي رحمه الله وغفر له.
And we have in front of us this short and concise treatise regarding the same subject matter about the Sheikh the Allama عبد الرحمن بن ناصر السعدي عليه رحمة الله.
وقد تميزت بالاختصار مع سهولة العبارة.
And it is distinguished in terms of its conciseness and its ease in terms of its wording.
اقتصر فيها الشيخ رحمه الله على مهمات الأصول التي يحتاجها طالب العلم.
The Sheikh he made it summarized to those subject matters, those important subject matters which the student of knowledge is in need of.
فنسأل الله عز وجل التوفيق لما يحبه ويرضاه، ونبدأ بعون الله التعليق على هذه الرسالة.
We ask Allah Ta'ala for tawfiq in it which He loves and is pleased with, and we begin with the tawfiq of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala in explanation of this concise treatise.
قال العلامة السعدي رحمه الله: الحمد لله رب العالمين حمدا كثيرا طيبا مباركا فيه، اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آله وأصحابه وأتباعه إلى يوم الدين، وسلم تسليما كثيرا. أما بعد، بدأ رحمه الله هذا المتن المختصر في علم أصول الفقه بالبسملة كما في نسخ أخرى.
And so the author, he begins this book after mentioning the name of Allah, the most merciful, the bestower of mercy. He says, the praise is for Allah, Lord of all that exists. Much abundant and goodly praise. O Allah, bestow your prayers and peace upon your Prophet Muhammad and upon his family and his companions and those who follow him until the day of recompense abundantly. So the Shaykh, he says that the author, he begins this treatise by way of the Basmala, as he does in many of his books.
وفي ذلك اقتداء بالكتاب العزيز وبالسنة النبوية.
By way of that, he's taking the example of the mighty book and the prophetic sunnah.
ثم حمد الله عز وجل، وحمد الله هو الثناء عليه تبارك وتعالى مع المحبة والتعظيم.
Then he begins by praising Allah تبارك وتعالى, and the hamd of Allah, it is the laudation or glorification of Allah تعالى by way of veneration, love, and respect.
والصلاة على النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم المراد بها الثناء عليه صلى الله عليه وسلم في الملأ الأعلى وفيها حصول كل خير.
Then he begins by sending the salah upon the Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم, and what is intended by the salah upon the Prophet عليه السلام is praising him and showering praises upon him within the highest and uppermost gathering.
والآل هنا قرابته عليه الصلاة والسلام المؤمنون به.
And concerning his family members here, it is in reference to those relatives of his that were believers.
وأصحابه من اجتمعوا به مؤمنين.
And concerning his companions, they are those who met him as believers.
وأتباعه كل من اعتنق دين الإسلام إلى يوم القيامة.
And concerning his followers, this is all of those who follow him up until the establishment of the hour.
قال وسلم تسليما كثيرا أي من السلامة من كل شر وآفة مما يضر الإنسان.
Concerning his statement, وسلم تسليما كثيرا, then this includes within it safety and security from all evils in this life and hereafter.
قال رحمه الله فإن أصول الفقه علم شريف مهم يحصل بمعرفته لطالب العلم ملكة يقتدر بها على النظر الصحيح في أصول الأحكام ويتمكن من الاستدلال على الحلال والحرام ويستعين به على استنباط الأحكام الشرعية من الكتاب والسنة ويعرف كيفية ذلك كله. بيّن الشيخ رحمه الله مكانة علم أصول الفقه وذكر ثلاث فوائد عظيمة لدراسته.
So the author, he mentions, so indeed the usul of fiqh is a noble knowledge and that is important. He said that by way of it, the student of knowledge acquires the ability to make correct examination to the foundations of rulings and deduce evidences for the halal and the haram. And this science aids him in deriving the legislative rulings from the book and the sunnah. And he will get to know how to do all of that and the way to do so. So the Shaykh, by way of these words, he is clarifying the makana and the status of usul al-fiqh. And he mentioned three benefits from knowing this knowledge.
الأولى حصول الملكة والقدرة التي يستطيع من خلالها طالب العلم أن ينظر النظر الصحيح في أدلة الأحكام الشرعية فيحصل له فهم مراد الله تعالى ومراد رسوله صلى الله عليه وسلم.
So the first of that is that one acquires the ability to make a correct examination. So one can, by way of this, he can look into and examine the affairs of the religion, and he can arrive at the correct rulings regarding affairs.
الثانية التمكن من الاستدلال بالنصوص الشرعية على أحكام الحلال والحرام، وذلك من خلال معرفته بقواعد الاستدلال ودلالات الألفاظ وغيرها من القواعد الأصولية.
Then he mentions the second is that he is able to make a correct examination to the foundations of and deduce evidences for the halal and haram. The Shaykh says, meaning that he's able to know that which is halal from that which is haram by way of the principles of derivation, and other than that, from the sciences which make him to arrive at this knowledge.
الثالثة التمكن من استنباط الأحكام الشرعية من نصوص الكتاب والسنة وفق الأسس السليمة والقواعد المستقيمة، ومن ذلك معرفة أحكام النوازل الفقهية المستجدة.
And so the third of them, he mentions that he is able to, he was able to derive legislative rulings from the book and from the Sunnah. He says, and this is by way of he's able to do this in a sound and correct manner by way of that which he arrives at from knowledge of these principles.
فيتمكن من الفهم والاستدلال والاستنباط ويعرف كيفية ذلك وطريقه الصحيح.
He says, and so he is able to acquire a sound understanding in how to extract rulings, and he's able to do so leading to a firm, a sound, and correct understanding of the text.
قال رحمه الله وهذا مختصر انتقيته من كتب أصول الفقه اقتصرت فيه على المهم المحتاج إليه واجتهدت في توضيحه لأن الحاجة إلى التوضيح والبيان أشد من الحاجة إلى الحذف والاختصار. بيّن رحمه الله أن هذه الرسالة مختصرة وموضوعها أصول الفقه وجمع فيها بين الاختصار والتوضيح والبيان واقتصر فيها على المهم من المسائل مع الاجتهاد في توضيحها وبيانها.
So the author goes on to mention that this is an abridged text which I have selected its content from the books of fiqh, and I have restricted myself into mentioning the most important and needed information, and I have strived in making it clear because the need for clarification and elucidation in text is more emphasized than the need for omission and abridgment. The Sheikh, he says, so the author clarifies that this text, it is summarized, and likewise that he has restricted it to it being the most important subjects that the student is in need of, and he has likewise clarified the importance and how one is in need of these two things, that of a conciseness as well as the affair of clarification, explanation of the text.
وذكر السبب في ذلك وهو أن الحاجة إلى التوضيح والبيان أشد من الحاجة إلى الاختصار لأن كثيرا من الكتب المختصرة في أصول الفقه قد تكون صعبة العبارة لكن الشيخ رحمه الله مع حرصه على الاختصار فقد اهتم بالتوضيح والبيان وهذا واضح في مؤلفاته الكثيرة رحمه الله.
And so he likewise mentioned the other affair the reason which led him to that is that he has strived to make it clear and easy to understand. He said because you'll find that many of the books that are written in the Usul al-Fiqh, the words are very difficult to comprehend and understand. He says, and so, even though they may be quite lengthy, they are somewhat difficult to understand. So he shows you within this book how he's striven to make it short, yet clear and easy to understand.
قال رحمه الله وأرجو الله تعالى الإعانة والسداد وسلوك أقرب طريق يوصل إلى الهدى والرشاد بمنه وكرمه آمين. ثم ختم رحمه الله مقدمته بهذا الدعاء النافع والذي اشتمل على أمور ثلاثة.
So then he goes on to say, and I hope for the assistance of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala and the ability to tread the shortest path to obtain guidance and uprightness by his bounty and his generosity. Ameen. So he concluded his introduction by way of this supplication, this tremendously beneficial supplication for us to have.
أولها سؤال الله تعالى الإعانة في الأمور كلها وهذا حال المؤمن كما قال سبحانه إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين.
So the first affair that he supplicated for is the help of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, because the Muslim is in need of the help of Allah Ta'ala in all of his affairs. And this is indicated by way of the statement of Allah Ta'ala, you alone we worship and you alone we ask for help.
ثانيها سؤال السداد والسداد هو التوفيق والاستقامة في جميع الأمور على الصواب وهو الطريق المستقيم في القول والفعل والاعتقاد.
The second affair is that he asked for sadad, and sadad is the success from Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala and to be upon what is correct in all affairs from statements and actions, because the servant is in need of correctness and the success from Allah Ta'ala in all of that.
وفي الحديث عن علي رضي الله عنه قال قال لي رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم قل اللهم اهدني وسددني واذكر بالهدى هدايتك الطريق وبالسداد سداد السهم.
It's come in the authentic narration from Ali radiallahu anhu that he said, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said to me, say, O Allah, I ask you for guidance and I ask you for straightforwardness. He said, and when you mention guidance, think about guidance upon the path. And when you mention straightforwardness, think about the straightness of an arrow.
ثالثها سؤال الله التوفيق لأقرب طريق موصل إلى الهدى والرشاد لأن في ذلك توفيرا للوقت والجهد مع حصول المطلوب والمراد وحصول أعمال صالحة جليلة كثيرة في أوقات وأزمنة قليلة يسيرة.
So then the third affair is that he asks for success in treading upon the shortest path that will bring about guidance and uprightness. He says, and because yani, this by way of the treading the shortest path that will bring this about, this will preserve one's time and it will preserve one's efforts so that they bring about the benefit in the shortest time possible.
ثم قال رحمه الله اعلم أن أصول الفقه هي الأدلة الموصلة إليه وأصلها الكتاب والسنة والإجماع والقياس. قوله رحمه الله اعلم أن أصول الفقه هي الأدلة الموصلة إليه بدأ رحمه الله بعد انتهائه من المقدمة ببيان معنى أصول الفقه.
So then the author he mentions know that أصول الفقه it is the foundation of fiqh. It is the evidence that leads to jurisprudence and its foundation of the other book, the sunnah, the ijma, and qiyas. So he mentions by way of his statement, know that the foundation of fiqh, and he mentions this after mentioning his introduction, thereafter he defines what usul al-fiqh is.
فقال رحمه الله بعبارة موجزة مختصرة أصول الفقه هي الأدلة الموصلة إليه ومراده بالأدلة هنا الأدلة الكلية الإجمالية والقواعد الأصولية العامة.
So he mentions that concerning his statement that usul al-fiqh it is the evidences that lead to jurisprudence this speech of his it is short, it is concise, it is to the point. His intention by evidences here is those all-inclusive and general types of evidences.
لأن الأدلة نوعان الأول أدلة كلية عامة لا تختص بباب فقهي معين.
Because the evidences are of two types. The first type is those evidences that are kulliyah, they are all inclusive and they are general and it is not restricted to a specific science or branch of knowledge.
فلا تختص بباب الطهارة أو الصلاة مثلا.
So it's not specific to tahara or salat for example.
مثل قاعدة الأمر للوجوب وقاعدة النهي للتحريم.
Such as the principle, for example, that the commands denote obligations and prohibitions denote tahrim or prohibition.
ومثل أن الكتاب حجة وأن السنة حجة.
And like the principle, for example, that the book is a hujjah is an evidence and the sunnah is likewise an evidence.
وغير ذلك من الأدلة الكلية العامة.
And other than that, from those evidences that are all inclusive in general.
فهذه هي أصول الفقه.
These are the usul al-fiqh.
قال شيخ الإسلام ابن تيمية رحمه الله.
ابن تيمية رحمه الله عليه said.
أصول الفقه وهي أدلة الأحكام الشرعية على طريق الإجمال.
He mentioned usul al-fiqh and they are the evidences, the all-inclusive evidences by way of consensus.
والنوع الثاني من الأدلة أدلة جزئية خاصة بالفروع الفقهية.
The second type of evidence. It is the evidence that is specific and it is restricted to a particular branch of knowledge.
مثل قوله تعالى وأقيموا الصلاة وآتوا الزكاة وقوله صلى الله عليه وسلم لا تلبسوا الحرير ولا الديباج.
Like the statement of Allah Ta'ala and establish the prayer and pay the zakat, like the statement of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم that it is not permissible to wear silk.
وهذه الأدلة الجزئية هي المتعلقة بأحكام الفقه ومسائله.
This is the ahkam al-juz'iyah. This is specific and partial types of ruling, and they are restricted to a particular sense.
وتعريف أصول الفقه بأنه أدلة الفقه الكلية الذي ذكره الشيخ رحمه الله تعريف مختصر.
And his defining أصول الفقه as being the evidences that are kulliyah. This is a short and concise definition of it.
إذ يعرفه كثير من الأصوليين بأن أصول الفقه هو أدلة الفقه الكلية وكيفية الاستفادة منها وحال المستفيد.
Because many of the usuliyun they define usul al-fiqh as being the all-inclusive and general evidences and how to utilize those evidences and the states and conditions of the ones who use it.
ولعل الشيخ رحمه الله اقتصر على التعريف السابق من باب الاختصار ومن باب أن العلم بهذه الأدلة الكلية يستلزم معرفة كيفية استعمالها والاستفادة منها ومعرفة من يقوم باستعمالها وهو المجتهد.
Because and the reason for summarization of the Sheikh of this definition is due to the fact that he knows that the adilla, the kulliya, that are all inclusive and general evidences, this is something which requires or that it has a need for the individual knowing how to use them, and likewise knowing the state and condition of the one who uses them, meaning the mujtahid himself.
قال رحمه الله وأصلها الكتاب والسنة والإجماع والقياس. ذكر رحمه الله أصل الأدلة التي يستمد منها الفقه وهي الأدلة الأربعة المتفق عليها.
And so the author mentions its foundations are the book, the sunnah, the ijma' and qiyas. So here the author he mentions these foundations from which fiqh is derived, and this is those four foundations that are agreed upon by the scholars.
والكتاب والسنة هما أساس الأدلة.
The book and the sunnah, they are the foundations of evidences.
فكل ما يأتي بعد الكتاب والسنة مرجعه إلى الكتاب والسنة.
So everything that comes after the book and the sunnah, then its reference point is the book and the sunnah.
قال تعالى فإن تنازعتم في شيء فردوه إلى الله والرسول.
So Allah تعالى said that if you dispute regarding anything, then return it back to Allah and His Messenger.
والرد إلى الله عز وجل هو الرجوع إلى القرآن الكريم.
Returning it back to Allah تعالى is returning it back to the Noble Quran.
والرد إلى النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم في حياته يكون بسؤاله وبعد وفاته بالرجوع إلى سنته عليه الصلاة والسلام.
Returning it back to the Messenger of Allah صلى الله عليه وسلم during his lifetime meant going to him and asking him, and returning it to him after his death it means returning back to his Sunnah صلى الله عليه وسلم.
وبعد الكتاب والسنة يأتي الإجماع والقياس.
After the book and the Sunnah comes إجماع and قياس.
وهما مستندان إلى الكتاب والسنة ويرجعان إليهما.
And they are extracted from the book and the Sunnah, and they return back to the book and the Sunnah.
ولذلك نرى أن العلماء يقولون الإجماع لا بد له من مستند.
Due to this, the ulama they say that إجماع it is a must, or it's inevitable that it actually has a source.
وهو الدليل الذي حصل الإجماع عليه.
And that is the evidence due to which there is إجماع.
والقياس لا بد له من أصل ورد حكمه في الكتاب أو السنة.
And قياس it is a must that it has an أصل that has come in the book or the Sunnah.
فالقياس إنما هو على ما ورد حكمه في الكتاب أو السنة.
So the قياس it is based upon something which the ruling of it has come in the book and the Sunnah.
فرجعت الأدلة كلها إلى الأصل وهو الكتاب والسنة.
So all evidence is returned back to the أصل, and that is the book and the Sunnah.
ثم قال رحمه الله والأحكام الشرعية خمسة.
Then he mentions رحمه الله that the legislative rulings are five.
الأحكام جمع حكم.
The أحكام is the plural of حكم.
والحكم لغة المنع والقضاء.
The hukum in terms of the Arabic language is prohibiting something, likewise giving a legislative ruling.
واصطلاحا عرفه العلماء بتعريفات منها قولهم عن تعريف الحكم الشرعي.
And concerning its meaning and its usage in the legislation, the scholars have defined it different ways. Amongst the definition they have given is the legislative ruling.
أثر خطاب الله المتعلق بأفعال المكلفين.
It is extracted from the book of Allah, and it has an effect upon those who are responsible for adhering to it.
أثر خطاب الله المتعلق بأفعال المكلفين بالاقتضاء أو التخيير أو الوضع. بالاقتضاء أو التخيير أو الوضع.
In terms of issuing a ruling for them or them having a choice in implementation of something.
والأثر هو الشيء المستفاد من خطاب الله.
And the أثر it is something that is extracted from the book of Allah.
وخطاب الله هنا كلام الله عز وجل الذي هو القرآن.
And the خطاب of Allah here is something extracted from the text and is the Quran.
أو سنة النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم.
Or the Sunnah of the Messenger of Allah صلى الله عليه وسلم.
لأنها وحي من جهة المعنى.
Because it is revelation from the standpoint of its meaning.
وقيد التعريف بأفعال المكلفين.
And the definition is restricted by way of the actions of the mukallafin.
لأن خطاب الله تعالى.
Because the address of Allah تعالى.
يعم ما هو أكثر من الأحكام الشرعية.
It is in general regarding all of those who are affected by way of the text of
فيشمل الأخبار والقصص.
So it includes information and stories.
وكذلك أحكام الحلال والحرام.
Likewise, the rulings of the halal and the haram.
والاقتضاء هو الطلب.
And اقتضاء is in reference to something that is required.
والطلب نوعان.
And the طلب is of two types.
إما طلب فعل أو طلب ترك.
Either one is required to do something or required to abandon something.
وكل واحد من النوعين طلب الفعل أو طلب الترك.
And each of these two types, being required to do something or required to abandon something,
قد يكون طلبا جازما أو يكون طلبا غير جازم.
Either it can be a requirement that is firm, or it can be something which is not so firm.
فطلب الفعل الجازم هو الواجب.
So the requirement to do something that is jazm, it is doing an obligation.
وطلب الفعل غير الجازم هو المستحب.
And the requirement to do something that is not firm, that it is something which is recommended.
وطلب الترك الجازم هو المحرم.
And the requirement to abandon something firmly, it is that which is haram, which is prohibited.
وطلب الترك غير الجازم هو المكروه.
And the requirement to leave something which is not firm, this is that which is disliked.
والتخيير بمعنى الإباحة واستواء الطرفين.
And التخيير bears the meaning of permissibility, and this is the case when both are equal.
فيجوز فعله ويجوز تركه.
So it is permissible to do it, it's permissible to leave it off.
فقولهم في التعريف بالاقتضاء أو التخيير.
So their statement in defining when they said by way of something being required or someone having a choice to do something.
تضمنت الأحكام الخمسة.
That it is included within these five rulings.
التي سيذكرها الشيخ رحمه الله.
Which the Shaykh, may Allah have mercy upon him, is going to mention.
والتي تسمى بالأحكام التكليفية.
Which are referred to as the rulings of those responsible types of rulings.
وهي التي يدور الفقه عليها.
And it is that which fiqh revolves around.
وكلمة الوضع في التعريف.
And the statement of what in terms of making something, making one responsible for something.
يعبر عنها العلماء بقولهم الأحكام الوضعية.
The scholars, they refer to that by way of saying the أحكام الوضعية. That's how they refer to it.
وهي الأحكام التي دل عليها خطاب الشرع.
And it is the rulings which the address of the legislation revolves around.
من كون الشيء سببا أو شرطا.
By way of something being a reason for something or something being a condition for something.
أو مانعا.
Or being a prohibitive factor.
وغير ذلك.
Or other than that.
وسميت وضعية.
It is referred to as وضعية.
لأن الشرع وضعها علامات للناس.
Because the legislation has made it something which is an indication for the people.
يستدلون بها.
By way of which they can extract evidence.
فالحيض مانع من الصلاة.
So حيض, for example, a menstruation is a preventative factor from prayer.
والطهارة شرط لصحة الصلاة.
And purification is a condition for the validity of prayer.
ودخول الوقت سبب لوجوب الصلاة.
And the entrance of time is a reason for the obligation of prayer.
وسيذكرها الشيخ رحمه الله ويشير إليها في مبحث آخر.
And the Sheikh is going to mention that, and he's going to make indications towards that under another field of study.
قال رحمه الله الواجب وهو ما أثيب فاعله وعوقب تاركه. بدأ رحمه الله بتعريف الأحكام التكليفية الخمسة.
And so the author mentions that the wajib, it is that which a person is rewarded for performing and punished for leaving off. So now he begins by way of explaining and clarifying what these أحكام, these five legislative rulings are.
والعلماء عندما يعرفون شيئا لهم في ذلك طريقتان.
The ulama, whenever they define something, they have two methods of doing so.
الأولى التعريف بالحد والماهية.
The first is by way of defining it precisely and clarifying exactly what it is.
ومعنى الحد كأنك ستضع حدا وسياجا حول الشيء.
The meaning of had is that one gives a clear and definitive definition for the term.
فَتَحْجِزَهُ فِيهِ وَتَمْنَعَ غَيْرَهُ مِنَ الدُّخُولِ فِي هَذَا السِّيَاجِ.
And so you clarify what that is, preventing something else from entering into that definition.
وَلِذَلِكَ يَشْتَرِطُ بَعْضُ الْعُلَمَاءِ فِي التَّعْرِيفِ بِالْحَدْ.
Due to this, some of the scholars make it a condition when defining had.
أَنْ يَكُونَ جَامِعًا مَانِعًا.
That the definition to be jamian mania, that it is all inclusive of everything that it needs to contain while preventing other than it from entering into it.
يجمع أوصاف المعرف ويمنع غيره من الدخول معه في التعريف.
So it brings together all of the descriptions that will define it while preventing that which is foreign to it from entering into that definition.
والمراد بالماهية.
And what is intended with mahiyah?
أن تجيب على سؤال معناه.
Is that you are answering a question that the meaning of which would be
ما هو هذا الشيء.
What is this thing?
والطريقة الثانية في التعريف.
The second path or method of defining something.
التعريف بالثمرة والنتيجة.
Is by way of defining the fruits and the end results of that thing.
ومن الأمثلة التي توضح الفرق بين الطريقتين.
From the examples which would clarify the difference between these two types.
ما إذا جاء شخص وأراد أن يعرف الماء مثلا.
If a person comes and wants to define water, for example.
فإذا أراد التعريف بطريقة الحد فسيقول.
So if he defines it by way of the method of had, then he's going to say.
هو مشروب سائل لا لون له ولا رائحة ولا طعم.
It is that drink that it is a fluid and has no smell, it has no taste.
فهو يحاول أن يجمع الأوصاف الخاصة بالماء.
So he's trying to bring together all of the qualities and characteristics that would describe water.
وإذا أراد التعريف بالثمرة مثلا.
And if he wants to define it by way of the fruits of it, for example.
فسيقول.
Then he will say.
ما يروي العطش.
That which will cause thirst to cease.
وكلا المسلكين في التعريف مستخدم عند العلماء.
And both of these two methods, they are utilized by way of the scholars.
ولكن بعضهم يقول التعريف بالحد أدق وأضبط.
But some of them say, for example, that to define it by way of had, this is more precise and clarifying.
والمهم هو ما أوصل الفكرة وقرب الفهم للطالب.
But what is important is that which will it will bring the definition, it will clarify the definition and make it easy for the student.
والشيخ رحمه الله عرف الأحكام الخمسة بطريقة الثمرة والنتيجة.
And so the Sheikh, he defines these five rulings by way of the method that is in reference to the fruits of it and the end results of it.
ولا مشاحة في الاصطلاح. وسنشير إلى التعريف بالحد أيضا.
And there's no problem with this method of usage, and we're going to also define it by way of the had in which to come.
قال رحمه الله وهو ما أثيب فاعله وعوقب تاركه أي في تعريف الواجب.
So in defining the wajib, he said it is that which a person is rewarded for performing it and punished for leaving it off.
فقوله ما أثيب فاعله أي يؤجر ويحصل على الثواب من فعله.
So his statement, it is that which the person is rewarded for performing. He means by way of that, he's going to attain by way of doing it a reward.
وعوقب تاركه أي من ترك فعل الواجب فإنه يعاقب.
And when he says that he's punished for leaving it off, means he's going to be punished for leaving off an obligation. So therefore, he's going to attain by way of that a punishment.
وقد أخذ على هذا التعريف أمران.
And so by way of this definition, two affairs are extracted.
الأمر الأول.
The first of them.
قالوا ينبغي أن يقيد الثواب بالامتثال.
That it is incumbent that we clarify ثواب by an example.
فليس كل من فعل الواجب يثاب.
Because not everyone who does an obligation is going to be rewarded.
فلا بد أن يكون قصده بالفعل الامتثال للأمر والإخلاص لله.
So it must that when we say performing it is going to attain a reward. He intends by way of that imtithal, meaning adhering to the command of Allah Ta'ala.
فمن أدى نفقة واجبة تخلصا بغير نية التقرب.
So whoever, for example, spends money that's obligatory upon him to spend, but he does not have the intention of drawing near to Allah Ta'ala.
قد يسقط عنه الإثم والمطالبة.
Then that which was incumbent upon him, and it has been fulfilled.
ولكنه لا يثاب إلا إذا قصد التقرب إلى الله.
But he's not going to be rewarded for it unless he intended by way of that drawing near to Allah.
الأمر الثاني.
The second affair.
في قوله وعوقب تاركه.
Concerning his statement, the one who abandons it is going to be punished.
قالوا هنا لا بد من التقييد بالقصد.
It is a must. They say that it is a must that one attach to the or one restrict that by way of him having the intention of doing that.
فإنه يعاقب إذا قصد ترك الفعل.
Because he's going to be punished if
إذا قصد ترك الفعل.
If he actually intended to leave, he's going to be rewarded if he actually intended to leave off that action.
فلم يكن جاهلا ولم يكن ناسيا.
So he didn't leave it off just because he was ignorant of it, nor because he forgot to do it.
وهذا كمحظورات الإحرام.
This is, for example, like the mahdhurat, those things that one must stay away from while he's in a state of ihram.
من فعل شيئا منها ناسيا أو جاهلا.
The one who does these actions forgetfully or ignorantly.
فإنه لا يعاقب.
He's not going to be punished.
هذا من جهة القصد.
This is from the standpoint of intention.
ومن جهة أخرى أيضا.
From another standpoint as well.
قالوا لا نقول يعاقب تاركه بل نقول ويستحق العقاب تاركه.
Is that in terms of the one who does not who leaves it off is going to be punished? They say that it should have been defined, or we should say that one who deserves to be punished.
فلا نجزم بالعقوبة.
Because we don't make it a condition that that everyone is going to be punished.
لأنها من باب الوعيد.
Because it is this is from the standpoint of threats.
فقد يعفو الله عز وجل عنه بالتوبة والاستغفار.
Because Allah Ta'ala He may overlook some individuals from the perspective of tawbah and istighfar.
أو بفعل أمور من الأعمال الصالحة تكفر عنه هذه الذنوب.
Or by way of him doing actions that will expiate these sins that he has committed.
فيكون التعريف أي تعريف الواجب بالثمرة.
So therefore, this definition, meaning definition of the wajib by way of its fruits.
الذي يثاب فاعله امتثالا.
Is it should be the one who does the obligation but adhering to the command of Allah.
ويستحق تاركه العقاب قصدا.
Is going to be rewarded, and the one who abandons it intentionally, then that individual deserves the punishment.
وأما تعريف الواجب بالحد والماهية.
As for defining the wajib by way of its precise definition and what it is.
فهو ما طلب الشارع فعله طلبا جازما.
It is that which the legislation has required with a firm requirement.
فكل ما طلبه الله عز وجل أو طلبه النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم.
So everything that Allah Ta'ala has required, or everything that the Messenger صلى الله عليه وسلم has made a requirement.
من المكلف أن يفعله.
Upon the mukallaf, upon the responsible person that he should do.
طلبا جازما أي مؤكدا.
With a firm and emphasized requirement.
فإنه يسمى واجبا.
That it is referred to as wajib.
ومن أسماء الواجب.
And from the names of the wajib.
الفرض واللازم والحتم.
Is فرض and لازم and حتم.
وغيرها.
And other than that.
ومن أمثلة الواجب أركان الإسلام الخمسة.
From the examples of the wajib are the five pillars of Islam.
ثم قال رحمه الله والحرام يقابله.
Then he mentions رحمه الله that the haram is the opposite of that.
أي ضد الواجب.
Meaning it is the opposite of the wajib.
فيكون التعريف.
So therefore the definition.
ما عوقب فاعله وأثيب تاركه.
Is that which the one who does it is going to be punished. And
فهو الذي يعاقب فاعله ويثاب تاركه.
It is that which the one who does it is going to be punished, and the one who leaves it off is going to be rewarded.
وما ذكر في تعريف الواجب من المؤاخذات على هذا التعريف.
And that which is taken from the definition of wajib from the mu'akhadat and everything that is connected to it.
فإنها تذكر هنا أيضا.
Then it is also mentioned here as well.
ويكون تعريف الواجب بالثمرة.
So therefore defining the wajib by way of its fruits.
بما يخرج عن المؤاخذات.
And that which extends out from it from those points.
هو الذي يستحق فاعله العقاب قصدا.
It is that which the one who the one who does it is deserving of the punishment if he intended that.
ويثاب تاركه امتثالا.
And the one who leaves it off is going to be rewarded if he did so adhering to the command of Allah.
ففاعل المحرم يستحق العقاب إذا قصد فعله وهو يعلم أنه محرم.
So therefore, the one who does that which is haram, knowing that it is haram and intending that, he deserves the punishment.
ويثاب من ترك أمرا محرما.
And the one who leaves off that which is haram.
تقربا إلى الله عز وجل.
Seeking to draw near to Allah عز وجل, he will attain the reward.
لأن الثواب لا بد فيه من وجود النية.
Because the ثواب, the reward, it is a must that one have intention in order to attain it.
أي نية التقرب إلى الله عز وجل بترك المحرمات.
Meaning the intention of drawing near to Allah تعالى by way of abandoning that which is impermissible.
وأما تعريف الحرام بالحد.
As for defining the haram by way of its clear-cut, decisive, and precise definition.
فهو ما طلب الشارع تركه طلبا جازما.
It is that which the legislator has required firmly that one leave it off.
ومن أسماء الحرام.
And from the names of the haram.
المحظور والممنوع.
Is that which is prohibited and that which one must stay away from.
ويسمى الحرام في عرف الشرع.
Within the custom of the legislator, haram is referred to
مكروها,
as that which is detestable.
كما قال تعالى في سورة الإسراء عند ذكر عدد من المنهيات.
As Allah Ta'ala has mentioned in Surah Al-Isra, when mentioning a number of those prohibited affairs.
كل ذلك كان سيئه عند ربك مكروها.
All of those things are evil with Allah Ta'ala and detestable.
ومن أمثلة الحرام عقوق الوالدين والغيبة والنميمة وغيرها.
From the examples of that which is haram is disobedience to the parents, backbiting, tailcaring, and other than it.
قال رحمه الله والمسنون وهو ما أثيب فاعله ولم يعاقب تاركه.
He said, عليه رحمة الله, that concerning the masnoon, it is that which a person is rewarded for performing it, but he is not punished for leaving it off.
المسنون أي المستحب.
مسنون means that which is مستحب.
ويقيد كذلك بالامتثال.
This is also restricted by way of one does so امتثالا, meaning adhering to the command of Allah.
فمتى يثاب المرء على المستحب.
So whenever the individual when is the individual rewarded for doing the مستحب.
إذا فعله امتثالا وتقربا إلى الله.
As if he does that affair adhering to the command of Allah تعالى, seeking to draw near to him.
وتعريف المسنون بالحد.
The definition of masnoon by way of its precise definition.
هو ما طلب الشارع فعله طلبا غير جازم.
It is that which the legislator has required without that being a firm requirement.
ومن أسمائه.
From its names.
المستحب والسنة والمندوب.
Is the مستحب, that which is sunnah, and that which is mandub.
ومن أمثلة المسنون.
From the examples of the masnoon.
السواك وقيام الليل وصلاة الضحى.
Is the use of the siwak, standing at night, and the duha prayer.
قال رحمه الله وضده المكروه.
He said رحمه الله, the opposite of that is the makruh.
يعني أن المكروه ضد المسنون.
Meaning the makruh is the opposite of the masnoon.
فيكون تعريفه.
So therefore, its definition is.
ما أثيب تاركه ولم يعاقب فاعله.
That which the one who leaves it off will be rewarded, and the one who does it is not going to be punished.
ومتى يثاب تارك المكروه.
And when will the one who leaves off the makruh be rewarded.
إذا قصد بتركه الامتثال والتقرب إلى الله تعالى.
If he intended by his leaving that off, adhering to the command of Allah and seeking to draw near to him.
وتعريف المكروه بالحد والماهية.
The definition of the makruh by way of its clear-cut definition and what it is.
هو ما طلب الشارع تركه طلبا غير جازم.
It is that which the legislator required without that being, I mean that a person leave it off without that being a firm requirement.
ومن أمثلة المكروه.
From the examples of the makruh.
الأخذ والإعطاء بالشمال.
Is taking and receiving, taking something and giving something with the left hand.
فإذا ترك استعمال اليد اليسرى في الأخذ والإعطاء.
So therefore, if one leaves that off and he leaves off taking and giving with the left hand,
فإنه يثاب على ذلك.
He's going to be rewarded for that.
ثم قال رحمه الله والمباح ما لا يتعلق به مدح ولا ذم.
Then he mentioned, رحمه الله, the mubah is that which is not connected to praise nor dispraise.
هذا المباح أي الباقي على أصله.
This mubah means that which remains upon its asl.
فهو لم يطلب فعله ولم يطلب تركه.
So therefore, one is not required to do it, nor are they required to leave it off.
فلا ثواب على فعله ولا عقاب على فعله.
So there is no reward for doing it, and there is no punishment for not doing it.
ولا ثواب على تركه ولا عقاب على تركه.
Nor is there a punishment for doing it, nor is there a punishment for leaving it off.
فهو مستوي الطرفين.
So therefore, the two sides are equal.
ومن أسماء المباح.
From the other names of the mubah,
الجائز والحلال والمأذون فيه,
is the جائز, the halal, and that which one is allowed to do.
وكما ذكرنا هذا المراد هذا المباح الباقي على أصله وهو الإباحة.
So this, as we mentioned, this what is intended by way of that is that it remains upon its also.
وليس المباح الذي أصبح وسيلة لأمر آخر.
And it is not the mubah, meaning that which is a wasila for something else.
كمباح صار وسيلة لأمر واجب مثلا.
Like the mubah, for example, the permissible affair becoming a wasila to do an obligation.
كالمشي إلى صلاة الجماعة.
For example, like walking towards the salat in jama'ah.
فهذا يأخذ حكم ما صار وسيلة له.
Because this walking is now going to take the ruling of that which one is arriving at by the walking.
ومن أمثلة المباح الباقي على أصله.
And from the examples of the mubah that remains upon its origin,
المشيو مباح والنوم مباح,
is the permissible walking or the permissible sleeping.
وأكل نوع معين من الطعام مباح,
and eating a specific type of permissible food.
فالأصل كما يقول العلماء في الأشياء المنتفع بها.
So the asl, as the ulama they say regarding this term,
الإباحة.
Is ibaha, is that these things are permissible.
فهذا هو المباح الباقي على أصله.
This is the mubah that remains upon its origin.
قال رحمه الله وإذا ورد الأمر في الكتاب والسنة فالأصل أنه للوجوب.
The author, may Allah have mercy upon him, he mentions, and so therefore, when a command comes in the book, in the sunnah, then the origin regarding that is that it denotes obligation.
فالأصل في أوامر الكتاب والسنة أنها للوجوب.
So the origin regarding the commands that come in the book and the sunnah is that they denote obligation.
إلا إذا دل الدليل على الاستحباب أو الإباحة.
Unless there is a dalil indicating that it is merely something that is recommended or permissible.
فالقاعدة العامة المستمرة.
So the ongoing general principle regarding this issue.
أن نحمل أوامر الكتاب والسنة على الوجوب.
Is that we interpret the commands that come in the book and the sunnah to mean obligation.
وأن نستفيد منها وجوب المأمور به.
And that we benefit from that they denote obligation that we are commanded with.
قال شيخ الإسلام رحمه الله.
شيخ الإسلام رحمه الله has mentioned.
أمر الله ورسوله إذا أطلق كان مقتضاه الوجوب.
That the command of Allah Ta'ala, if it is come across, it is something which denote obligation.
والأمر عرفه علماء الأصول بقولهم.
The amr or the command, the people of knowledge have defined it by saying.
هو طلب الفعل على وجه الاستعلاء.
It is seeking to do an action in the highest possible way.
وصيغته افعل.
And the siga or the wording of it is do this.
فقولهم طلب الفعل يخرج النهي الذي هو طلب الترك.
And so their statement, it is the requirement to do something, what goes outside of that and is not included in that is tark, or the abandonment of something.
وقولهم على وجه الاستعلاء.
And a statement in a way that denotes isti'la.
أي على وجه القهر والترفع.
Meaning in a way that denotes force, and the one that is given a command is in an elevated position.
وهذا يدل على أن صيغة الأمر.
And so this indicates and proves that the context of a command.
لا بد أن تصدر من أعلى إلى أدنى.
It is inevitable that it comes from a higher position to a lower position.
كأوامر الله تعالى لخلقه.
like Allah Ta'ala's commands to the creation.
وأوامر الرسول صلى الله عليه وسلم.
And the commands of the Messenger صلى الله عليه وسلم.
والتي هي صادرة عن الله تعالى.
All of that which emanates from Allah تبارك وتعالى.
كما قال سبحانه إن الحكم إلا لله.
As Allah Ta'ala says, indeed the ruling is only for Allah.
فما يأمر به النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم.
So that which the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم has commanded.
هو أمر الله تبارك وتعالى.
In reality, is the command of Allah تبارك وتعالى.
وما الدليل على أن الأمر يفيد الوجوب؟
What is the evidence that the command denotes obligation?
أدلة كثيرة منها قوله تعالى فليحذر الذين يخالفون عن أمره أن تصيبهم فتنة أو يصيبهم عذاب أليم.
The evidences are many, and amongst them is the statement of Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala, let them beware those who oppose His command, meaning the command of a messenger, that a punishment should afflict them or that great fitna shall engulf them.
هذا دليل من القرآن على أن الأمر يفيد الوجوب.
This is an evidence from the Quran that the command denotes obligation.
لأنه لو لم يفد الوجوب.
Because if it did not denote obligation.
لما توعد الله عز وجل عليه بالوعيد بإصابة الفتنة وبالعذاب الأليم.
Allah Ta'ala would not have issued a threat that a fitna will afflict a person or a painful punishment will come to them.
ومن الأدلة على إفادة الأمر للوجوب من السنة.
From the evidences from the Sunnah that the obligation denotes, that the command denotes obligation.
قول النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم لولا أن أشق على أمتي لأمرتهم بالسواك.
It's the statement of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم wherein he said, had I not deemed it to be difficult upon my ummah, I would have commanded them with the siwak.
فلولا أن الأصل في أمره أنه يفيد الوجوب.
If it were not for the fact that the أصل of the command is that it denotes wujub or obligation.
لما خشي المشقة على أمته.
He would not have feared difficulty upon his ummah.
فغير الواجب لا مشقة فيه من جهة جواز تركه.
Because that which is not an obligation, then there is no difficulty in relation to it, because it is something which is merely permissible.
ومن الأدلة التي يذكرها الأصوليون في تقرير دلالة الأمر والنهي.
And from the evidences which the scholars of Usul extract from this concerning the commands and prohibitions.
أن العرب يستخدمون الأمر ويستفيدون منه الوجوب.
The Arabs, they utilize the commands, these commands, and they denote or they deem them to denote obligation.
فيقولون لو قال الرجل لابنه مثلا.
So they say, for example, if a man were to say to his son,
أحضر لي ماء ولم يحضر.
Bring me some water, and he doesn't bring it.
قالوا يصح أن يلومه ويعنفه.
They say that it is correct for him in this instance to criticize him and to punish him for doing that.
لأن الأمر يفيد الوجوب.
Because his command which he gave him is something which denoted obligation.
ولو قال له الابن مثلا إن الأمر لا يدل على الوجوب لم يقبل منه.
And if it were to be said, if the son were to say to him, for example, that the command it doesn't denote obligation, then he would not accept that from him.
بمعنى أن استخدام العرب فيه تقرير لهذا الأصل.
Meaning that the in the usage of the Arabs, they actually confirm this also, this foundation.
قال رحمه الله إلا لقرينة تصرفه إلى الندب أو الإباحة إذا كان بعد الحظر غالبا.
As the author goes on to mention, he says, except due to a circumstance which changed it to a recommendation or towards the permissibility.
فالقاعدة المستمرة أن الأمر للوجوب إلا إذا دل الدليل على الاستحباب أو الإباحة.
So therefore the qaida that is ongoing is that the command, it denotes obligation unless there comes something which takes away from it being obligatory to being a recommendation.
فقد يأتي دليل يصرف الأمر عن دلالته الأصلية.
Because something may come that would make it depart from its original meaning.
إلى دلالة أخرى كالاستحباب أو الإباحة.
Until it takes another ruling such as it being something which is recommended or permissible.
وهذه أهم الدلالات التي يصرف لها الأمر.
So this is the most important of affairs which will take a command away from its original meaning.
ومثال صرف الأمر إلى الاستحباب.
From the examples of those things which take an amr to bear the meaning of recommendation.
قول الله عز وجل وأشهدوا إذا تبايعتم.
Is the statement of Allah Ta'ala
وأشهدوا إذا تبايعتم.
And take witnesses if you sell something.
هذا أمر بالإشهاد في البيع ويؤخذ منه وجوب الإشهاد.
And so this is the command to take witnesses when doing a transaction is something which denotes that which is obligatory.
ولكن هذا الأمر محمول على الاستحباب.
However, this command is interpreted to mean recommendation.
وذلك لأنه ورد أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم باع ولم يشهد.
This is because there has come that the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم on one occasion sold something but did not take witnesses.
فدل على أن الأمر في قوله تعالى وأشهدوا.
So therefore, this proves that the command in the statement of Allah Ta'ala and take witnesses.
المراد به الاستحباب للوجوب.
What is intended by way of that is something that is a recommendation and not an obligation.
ومثال صرف الأمر إلى الإباحة.
And from the examples of taking a command to be something which is merely permissible.
كالآيات التي ورد فيها أمر بعد حظر.
It's like the ayah that comes within it, the command.
بعد حظر. والحظر المنع.
That which comes after حظر, which comes after warning, because the meaning of warning is prevention of something.
فيكون الشيء مأمورا به أو مباحا في الأصل.
So therefore, in the case something that something is permissible at its origin.
ثم يمنع منه ثم يؤمر بفعله.
And then one is prohibited from doing that, and then commanded with doing it thereafter.
ومثاله أن المحرم ممنوع من الصيد.
For example, that the one who's in a state of ihram, he is prevented from hunting.
أثناء إحرامه.
While he's in a state of ihram.
ثم قال الله عز وجل وإذا حللتم فاصطادوا.
As Allah Ta'ala says, but when you exit a state of ihram, then you can hunt.
فإذا انتهى وتحلل من إحرامه أمر بالصيد.
So therefore, when the one's ihram ends, when he comes out of the state of ihram, he's been commanded here to hunt.
هل الأمر بالصيد هنا على الوجوب؟
So does the command to hunt here denote obligation?
المشهور أنه يرجع إلى ما كان عليه قبل المنع.
What is well known is that it returns back to the state that it was in before it was prohibited.
وهو الإباحة.
And that is state of it being permissible.
كما هو الغالب.
As is the case the majority of them.
قال رحمه الله والنهي للتحريم إلا بقرينة تصرفه إلى الكراهة.
And the author, may Allah have mercy upon him, he said that the prohibition is indicative of forbiddance unless there is a circumstance that changes it toward a dislike.
فأصل النهي من الكتاب والسنة أنه على التحريم.
So therefore, the origin regarding the prohibitions in the book and the sunnah is that they denote forbiddance.
والنهي طلب ترك الفعل بالقول الدال عليه.
And the nahi, it is the requirement to leave something by way of a statement that indicates that.
على جهة الاستعلاء.
From the standpoint of it being the one who prohibited is in a higher position.
وصيغته لا تفعل.
And the siga, the context of it, is like one is saying, "Don't do something."
قال الإمام الشافعي رحمه الله.
Imam Shafi'i رحمه الله stated.
أصل النهي من رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم.
That the origin of the prohibition from the Messenger of Allah صلى الله عليه وسلم.
أن كل ما نهى عنه فهو محرم.
Is that everything that he has prohibited is haram.
حتى تأتي عنه دلالة تدل على.
Until there comes an evidence indicating.
أنه إنما نهى عنه لمعنى غير التحريم.
That he prohibited that thing with a meaning that does not denote forbiddance.
ومثال النهي قول الله تعالى ولا تقربوا الزنا.
And the examples of the nahi is like the statement of Allah Ta'ala, don't come near to zina.
والأدلة على هذه القاعدة كثيرة من الكتاب والسنة.
The evidence for this principle are many from the book and the sunnah.
أن الأصل في النهي التحريم.
That the origin regarding the prohibition is forbiddance.
ومنها قوله تعالى.
From that is the statement of Allah Ta'ala.
وما نهاكم عنه فانتهوا.
And what he prohibits you from, stay away from it.
فكل النواهي في الكتاب والسنة تحمل على التحريم.
So all of the prohibitions that come in the book and the sunnah, they denote forbiddance.
إلا إذا دل الدليل على خلاف ذلك.
Unless an evidence comes indicating other than that.
وهذا الدليل يسميه العلماء الصارف.
This evidence the ulama referred to it as a sarif.
الذي يصرف الأمر أو النهي عن دلالته الأصلية إلى دلالة أخرى.
Which takes the commands and prohibitions from the original rulings and makes them have other rulings.
كالكراهة مثلا.
Such as the ruling of dislike, for example.
ومثال ذلك.
From the examples of that.
أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم نهى عن الشرب قائما.
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم prohibited drinking while standing.
الأصل أن هذا النهي للتحريم.
The أصل is that this prohibition denotes forbiddance.
لكن ورد عنه صلى الله عليه وسلم أنه شرب قائما.
But there has come from him صلى الله عليه وسلم that he drank while standing.
فحمل بعض أهل العلم النهي الأول على الكراهة.
And so therefore some of the people of knowledge they say that that prohibition it denoted dislike.
قالوا هذا الفعل من النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم.
They say that this action from the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم
يدل على أن النهي الأول في الحديث
indicates that the first prohibition that came in the hadith
ليس المراد منه التحريم.
That it is not denote forbiddance.
لأن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم
because the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم
لا يفعل المحرم
would not do something that is haram.
هذا والله تعالى أعلم، وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على عبده ورسوله نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. الحمد لله رب العالمين.
للاستماع إلى الدروس المباشرة والمسجلة والمزيد من الصوتيات يرجى زيارة شبكة بينونة للعلوم الشرعية على الرابط بينونة.net، وجزاكم الله خيراً.